I realize we're still a few minutes early, but I'm going to go ahead and start. I'm Cami Willett, and I'm from the University of Missouri. I'll be presenting stream bank erosion rates in two watersheds of the Central Claypan region this morning. I'd like to recognize my authors, Sarah Burgess and Dick Schultz from Iowa State University, and my advisor, Dr. Lurch from ARS in Columbia, Missouri. Erosion has long been recognized as a significant environmental problem, especially in agricultural watersheds. And particularly in the Claypan region, it has largely been assumed, because of their runoff prone nature, that overland erosion is the main contributor to in-stream sediment. And because of that, there's been very limited and almost no publications reporting the erosion rates in Claypan regions. So the objective of my study has been to investigate the effects of land use, season, and stream order on stream bank erosion rates in two watersheds of the Central Claypan in northeastern Missouri. Oops, wrong way. My two study watersheds are located in the Salt River Basin. Crooked and Otter Creek were chosen because they are representative of the intensely row-cropped watersheds of this region. Crooked Creek is approximately 284 square kilometers, and Otter Creek encompasses an area of approximately 271 square kilometers. And each of those dots on this diagram represents one of 10 third-order study sites. And I just want to note that this morning I'll only be presenting data from our third order study sites. As a complete analysis, including the first and second order data, has not been concluded yet. Sorry. Our land use treatments that we're investigating include pasture, forest, riparian forest, and cropland. And at our pasture study sites, cattle have open access to the stream. In our forest, we defined it had to have a minimum of 30 meter width of trees on each side of the stream, so a total of 60 meters. And riparian forest had a minimum of 10 meters of trees on either side of the bank. And the typical crop rotation in this area is a corn, soybean, and occasionally wheat crop rotation. Once we identified land use treatments that met our criteria, we also had to find a minimum of 400 meter reach that had that continuous land use on both sides of the bank. We also had to correctly identify the order, which in this case will be third order. And we also had to have land access to all of our sites because they're all located on privately owned land. So we have a total of 10 sites, three for each of these first three treatments, and we have a single crop site. Just a note, in this landscape, there's a high flooding frequency, so farmers, especially once you get to the larger order streams, are not able to crop all the way up to the stream. And so the default is kind of just to let trees and a riparian zone form there. So we're hoping to find two more crop sites and establish that, but for now we just have one. For the objective of studying season, we define three seasons for our study period. And season one is December through March, season two is April through July, and season three is August through November. And we took our first pin measurements in season three of 2007, and our most recent set of data is from season two of this year. And we always measure at the end of each season. Once we identified suitable sites, we then performed stream bank surveys where we took handheld GPS units and walked along the bank, identifying point features like gullies and debris dams. And we also identified the lengths of eroding and non-eroding banks. And we used criteria developed by NRCS to identify the eroding banks, and they had to be nearly vertical slope, two-thirds bare of vegetation, or signs of obvious slumping and undercut, etc. Once we knew where the eroding banks were, we then installed pin plots to measure a minimum of 20% of the eroding length at each site. And pin installation was based on the dimensions of the bank. Here's an example of one of our third order sites. Each of the pins was placed approximately 2 meters apart, and then depending on the height of the bank, we had a different number of pins in each column. So higher banks had more pins and lower banks had less pins. The field data that we collected included the pin measurements, the plot dimensions, bulk density, and eroding length. And from those data, we were able to calculate a linear erosion rate of stream bank erosion, and those will be presented in kilograms per meter stream bank. And then we performed two-way analysis of variance with season and land use, and one-way analysis of variance of season within land use and land use within season. And for all of our ANOVAs, we used an alpha of 0.05. The results of the two-way ANOVA indicated that both season and land use were highly significant in controlling stream bank erosion rates. And the p-value for season was 1.7 times 10 to the negative 17th. So this is a highly significant relationship. And land use, the p-value was 0.001. And you can see averaged across seasons within a given land use, the average erosion rate was 18.3 for forest, 62.7 for pasture, 61 for riparian forest, and 72.7 for crop. And then averaged across land use and within a given season, season one average erosion rate was 125 kilograms per meter, season two was 25 kilograms per meter, and season three, which is marked by very low levels of net erosion, was 6.8. And just a note, where you see these negative numbers, that's indicating net deposition. So we ran one-way ANOVAs testing season within a given land use, and what we found is that season one, no matter what the land use, excluding the crop, had always significantly greater erosion rates than either of the other seasons. And season one, again, was December through March, so that's encompassing the winter months. And this is consistent with past studies that have found the majority of erosion that occurs in winter. And this is largely attributed to saturated bank conditions that persist throughout the winter months. There's a lack of evapotranspiration, so banks remain saturated between events, and whenever you get an event, you're seeing large magnitudes of erosion occurring, often slumping and mass moving, rather than the scour that's maybe more typical of the other seasons. So this graph really illustrates the difference between season one and season two and three. And this ANOVA that we ran was land use within a single season, and the results indicate that forest has much lower erosion rates than any of these other land use treatments. And the difference between forest and crop and pasture is readily explained by the differences of the vegetation that you see along the banks in these study sites. Forest is characterized by having mature, large trees that are continuous, a very dense root mat that occurs that's continuous along the bank, whereas in crop and pasture sites is more characteristic to have grasses, or if you have trees there, interspersed. So what this data is suggesting is that, especially during the winter, trees are doing a lot better job of protecting banks from erosion, and particularly those mass movement events, the slumping. And the larger trees are just doing a better job than the grasses are at keeping those banks from slumping down. Now, the difference between forest and riparian forest, the explanation maybe is a little bit more subtle, and right now we're speculating that these differences are caused by land use history. When this area was cleared for cropping, farmers had every intent of cropping right next to the stream, but after years of planting close to the stream and flooding, they realized that wasn't profitable anymore. So the default state was to just let a riparian zone grow back up. And in the view of the farmers, these areas are, at least in this watershed, these areas are kind of out of sight, out of mind, they're not managed, they're unprofitable. So what we see in riparian forests is that you have, perhaps you have younger trees, and you also have a much narrower species diversity. In riparian forests, we see a lot of locusts, and that's a younger species in this succession. And so that's our speculation right now. We also have information on gully occurrence for these two land uses. And perhaps if we look at that more closely, we'll find that riparian forests have more gullies, and maybe that's causing the bank destabilization. So in conclusion, we see that season is highly significant, and the majority of the erosion that's occurring in these watersheds is occurring in the winter. And again, this is consistent with past studies. We also found that land use is significant, and less erosion occurs in forested streams than any other treatment. Also, I want to note that erosion rates in this watershed are highly variable. We have very flashy stream hydrography, and despite these variabilities in erosion rates, we're still seeing significant relationships between season and land use. And I think that's really important, especially the land use, looking at that as far as targeting management practices, I think that's really key, and that relationship is very strong. So the implication for our management, based on these preliminary results, perhaps if cattle access is limited to streams, that would promote the growth of more continuous trees along the banks. And if farmers were willing to maintain a wooded riparian zone between stream and crop fields. And I think overall the biggest implication of the study is that there's a need for improved riparian zone management in this area. Like I mentioned, to the farmers, these riparian zones are just kind of out of sight, out of mind. And perhaps if they started managing for increased species diversity, or they promoted tree and root density along the bank, maybe would start to, out of those thin riparian zones, maybe we'd be able to enhance the protection of the bank that we see in the forested sites. And I'd like to thank all these people that have helped and spent a lot of muddy, cold hours in the streams of Missouri. Thank you. Yes?
It would be relatively easy to just do an inventory of trees to get density and size to either support it or refute hypothesis. Is there an intention to do that?
No formal plans have been set, but actually Dick Schultz, who we're working with from Iowa State, is a forester. I'm not a forester, but I think that would be something that would be very easily done and would be a great asset to this research. Yes?
Do you think there could be any difference between the sites that the settlers cleared versus the ones they didn't clear in the first place?
I definitely think that is the case, and I'm not exactly sure how you'd get at those land use differences. I don't know if you'd have to look at older maps, but again, that is something I think when we look into that, it would really help explain some of those differences that we're seeing. Yeah?
What kind of variability in terms of your pins? So depending on the size, I was just wondering what kind of variation you see them. So I'm just wondering about how tight that data set.
Well, our pins that we are installing are about 75 centimeters long, and then we leave about 10 centimeters exposed. And sometimes when we're having a mass event like a slumping, we see really highly variable pin measurements there, because when you get a slump, you leave some pins that are completely exposed. I mean, they might be hanging on by this much, but then others that are lower down are getting deposited over. So there's a lot of variability, but despite that, we're still seeing these differences.
And within that, did you notice any difference in the range of variations between those different land use types? And that may have been more telling in terms of the range of variability within a land use type.
Well, I put those error bars on the...
Yeah, so I saw the error bars. I just wondered if there's any... So I just
Not having looked at that specifically, I'm not sure, but just recalling my own observation, I say that pasture sites probably have some of the highest variability, just because you have the influence of the cows, and most of the time all you have stabilizing the bank is grass. And if that is slumping, that's not doing a lot to stabilize the bank. So I'd say probably in pasture we see some of the greatest variability within a given season. Yes?
What kind of tillage system were you mentioned the rotation on the cropland, but you didn't mention the tillage system. Do you have any idea what they were doing?
I'm not exactly sure what tillage system they used. That's probably something I should look into.
I would say, based on observation, the field at the one crop site was probably conventionally tilled. I mean, it was not a no-till operation or anything like that. Because you see periods of time, certainly in the winter months, that it's a clean field. And so it's a great fall.
Any more questions? Yes.
Did you notice the bank erosion related to the distance from the head water? Notice when erosion must occur according to the volume of the water. And did you notice that it will getting more toward the mouth of the watershed?
Yeah, we haven't specifically looked at that yet, but I think we will be able to get at that question once we incorporate the first and second order data into our computations.